The unsurpassed, penetrating and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. Today I'm going to talk about the self. I'm always talking about the self. I love talking about the self because it's a fundamental part of the Buddha's teaching. How we look at the self, how we work with it. People ask, you know, does the self really exist? People who think about these things ask this. Does the self really exist? And does it have a purpose? Well, my experience is the self doesn't exist quite the way we think it does. I think it's more like a working hypothesis. It has a function, but it's not quite real. And it's not something we can build our life around in any kind of satisfactory way. It's not something very solid, you know. To have a sense of being a self, being a me, is quite normal. Otherwise, we couldn't function. It has a purpose. We have a sense of who we are, you know, where we come from, our history, our background, how we fit into the world, or sort of. We have to be aware of our body and its needs, otherwise we can't feed it, you know. And our mind, most of our sense of self, is based on our history, actually, our story, my background, my life, my family, my this, my opinions, my views, my everything. It's all memory, really. We try to remember, oh yes, I'm a such and such. This is what I believe. Yes, right. You know, otherwise we might forget our likes and dislikes. That would never do. Or who we are and who we think we are, you know, or what we think we're like. It's all, a lot of it's just our memory or our ideas of who I am. And then we come to training, and it all gets a bit wobbly. We learn the self is not as real as we thought it was. Does it exist? Does it not exist? Well, it depends. We're told it both exists and does not exist, and that it neither exists nor does not exist, and both does exist and doesn't exist, and we don't know what to do, and what do we do with that? Well, actually, it's helpful, if we're going to get through it all, to say the self exists. It means we're responsible for what we do, what we say, what we think. There's no getting away from it. We can't just say, well, there's no self, so it doesn't matter what I do, nothing matters. We get our karmic consequence. We're responsible for what we do, what we say, what we think, and what we don't do, or say, or think. And the consequences come back to us. The results of what I do come back to me. You know, so there's a certain sense of an individual being here. So I need to take care of what I do or don't do. I need to keep to the precepts, to train myself not to be angry, greedy, selfish, and so on. And the precepts are largely dealing with self. You know, when you think about it, you're all dealing with self. And then we have, the self does not exist. Well, what does that mean? How do we understand that? Never mind that it both exists and doesn't exist. I'm not even going to worry about that bit. But at least, the self does not exist. Okay. A great deal of the teaching of the Buddha, the training of the mind that he taught, is to help us break down this idea of being a self. The analysis of experience into the five skandhas, form, the body, sensation, thought, activity or will, volition, and consciousness. People break these down in different ways, but I think fundamentally all it means is the sum of our experience. Physical, mental, spiritual, all that, everything that we experience can be categorized, if you'd like to do that kind of thing, into five variable categories. And then there's the six senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. The mind is just another sense. Wonderful. I am not my mind, I am not my nose. The 32 parts of the body, you know, there's that. You can think about all that, all the bones and skin and all that. And then there's the four elements, earth, water, fire and air, all these different ways of looking at me. Am I actually just water? Am I just my body? Am I my nose? Am I my bones, you know? Am I my mind? Or some people think, my body is my, is I am my body, or I am my mind. But actually when you look more closely, it tends to break down, because everything changes all the time. Well, this analytical approach is very helpful for some of us, and some of us like it, and play with it or look at it, and actually can undermine some of our belief in the self. And for some of us, it's not helpful at all. It's merely confusing, and we don't like it. But it's all right, because there's a simpler way to deal with the self. The other day I met somebody who'd been through a lot of suffering, and he had learned, when you feel bad, help someone else. Well, actually, I think he got it from the big AA book, which is really good. You know, I haven't read it all, but there we go. But when you feel bad, help somebody else. And he was doing this. He'd been through a great deal, and he had really come through a lot and was learning to be kind, to help other beings, to do things in a different way from how he had done them before. And I was really impressed by this person, with this simple thing of when you feel bad, help somebody else. There was a lot more to it than that. But just this getting out of oneself, one's own misery, to help another being who may be worse off than me. It's not a magic bullet, and it doesn't help with everything, but it certainly helps a lot. Just to get out of my me, my miserable little meanness. We can obsess about our problems and get stuck in our suffering. Even when we're training, trying to work on ourselves, work on our stuff, you know, we can get stuck in me and my stuff, me and my problems, me and my mind, me and my shortcomings, me and my karma, me and my training, me and my everything. It's all about me if we're not careful, and that's not the intention. We still have to deal with all that, me and my stuff. We can't just push it away and ignore it and pretend it's not there. But we don't have to get stuck in it and forget the bigger picture. There is the bigger picture, bigger than me and my stuff. I talk about this all the time, but too bad. The transfer of merit ceremony we just did. We're offering merit to other beings. We don't know who they all are. We don't know the situations or the suffering they're undergoing. We just offer merit. We don't have conditions. We don't ask. We don't judge. We just offer merit, giving something of ourselves to all these beings who need merit. Giving. The four wisdoms, charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy. They're all about kindness to other beings, and their wisdoms. You can't practice charity, tenderness, benevolence, and sympathy without somebody to practice it for. You know, maybe we can be kind to ourselves and so forth, but it's about helping other beings. They're not just intellectual ideas, and they're not emotional things either. We're not, you know, sobbing out of benevolence. We're trying to practice a certain amount of equanimity, not judging, not criticizing, not inflicting our views and ideas and opinions on people, or thinking this person deserves sympathy and that really doesn't, you know, I won't give them sympathy, but this person, this poor person over here. Sympathy to everybody. That's, you know, what we're trying to do. It's beyond me and my views. They're for everybody, for us to offer merit or kindness or benevolence to everybody. Think of charity. You know, you think of it as giving worldly goods, but actually we can practice charity for anybody. Sometimes a wealthy person may be really lonely, and they just need a friend or someone to talk to. And we can do that. We don't have to think, oh, this person has everything and I have nothing. We can offer kindness to them. That's charity, that's giving. Tenderness means kindness, respect, not harshness or criticism. To love all beings. Well, we may not be able to completely love them wholeheartedly, but at least to try to refrain from hating them, you know, maybe easier to start with. Benevolence. We might feel less than benevolent to people who are killing other people. But if we just think for a moment, benevolence means wishing well. Would we not wish these people well, that their suffering may be eased in other ways than killing other people? You know, a happy person does not go around killing people. They have to be a deeply unhappy person to kill another being. They need benevolence. They need kindness. No matter what people's reasons appear to be, no happy person kills other people. And if they do, they're not going to be happy for very long at all. May they indeed be free from suffering. We can wish them well. Anybody who harms beings or who is harmed. Anybody. Sympathy. Feeling with other beings. Not judging them for what they do or the situations they're in. Feeling with. To feel with is to try to see things from their point of view. To imagine what it might be like to be them or in their position. Sympathy. You can do that with anybody, no matter what they may have done or what we may think. What's it like to be somebody in one of those armies slaughtering people? What must it be like as poor wee things stuck in this situation? How do you get out of that, if you want to? To widen our view, to embrace all beings as best we can. We have to do this, actually, as individuals and as a world. We can't remain in isolation and think only of ourselves and our interests. We have to help each other in this world. One of the great benefits of the internet is that it helps us to think more globally, to think of other beings in other places, other countries, other lands, other times, you know, not just this moment in history, but what's gone by before? Why are these people hating these other people? Thousands of years of history there, maybe. To begin to understand a little bit and to see that we're just a little tiny being in a huge universe, and this is just this tiny little moment, and all the past and future, which doesn't exist, but it still affects what people do. We're all part of each other. None of us is independent. We nourish each other. You can't thrive in isolation, really. You may go up your mountain by yourself, but you're not going to be happy for long. Where's my morning tea? We grow and learn in relation to other beings. We practice the four wisdoms in relation to other beings. It's really hard to be wise all by oneself. Because you think, oh, I'm doing fine. I've often talked about this. Somebody off in their little cave, oh, here I am, I'm doing great. I'm all equanimous and, nice. And they come back to the temple or to life or humanity and go splat and make a complete pig's ear of everything. And then realize, that wasn't so smart. Anyway. To come back to the idea of the self, does it exist or not exist? Well, I think some of what's being pointed to is no separate self. Yes, there seems to be a sort of a self, but it's not separate from anything else. It's just part of everything. And it's not a permanent, unchanging thing. It's not a little lump separate from all the other little lumps. It changes from moment to moment. There's nothing we can grasp onto and say, this is me. And it's permeable. We breathe in and out. Well, how much of this breath is me? Is oxygen going into my blood? Is that me or is it not me? And then there's carbon dioxide going out. Was that me or wasn't me? Is it me? Is it not me? Doesn't make any sense, really. We eat. And does it become me? You could think about these things if you want to. And this little seeming self, you only exist in relation to everything else. We make no sense in a vacuum. We're only a me in relation to all the other me's. And it's just an illusion, I think. I think there's a lot more to it than the self is just not separate. I think there's a whole lot more than that. However, that I am not a separate, independent self is a very good start, because I cannot live in isolation. I cannot think only of myself, what I want, my interests, my little view, my opinions, my everything. I have to think bigger than that. Otherwise, I suffer. to live as part of the greater body. The greater body of humanity, to begin with. Not just thinking of our own little isolated bubble. This is a good part of wisdom, to know that we're actually part of everybody else, everything else. Giving and receiving. Receiving from others, giving to others, like breathing in and out, to allow that, not just to be giving, but also to be willing to receive. Why should I not receive also? What makes me so special that I can't receive? To give and receive, in and out, that permeable skin. No shell to isolate us from everything else, that we're all just part of that greater human body, and the real greater body, the Buddha body, the part of that. And this is really what we're coming down to, is this little me cannot be separate from that. It's only just a little part of that. We're all part of the earth. We're all part of the beings that live on this earth. And we're also part of that greater body, which is much deeper and bigger than what we can see. The analogy of the water and the wave, we're just little waves on this ocean, not separate, and you can see with that analogy, in no way can a wave be considered as separate from the sea. It's just a part of the sea. It's not sitting up here above the water saying, I'm a wave, it's ridiculous. It's just a little wave arises, abides, and passes away, just like us. We're just in the same way, are we part of that greater body. We arise, we abide, live our life, change, and then go back into it, die. And there's nothing to fear in this. And there's nothing to hold on to in this. And there's no reason to get all upset about everything, if this is, you know, since this is the case. The more we can see in this way, the less we tend to get upset about everything. Thinking that we're separate is what creates all our suffering. The more we can step back from that and see the bigger picture, see that we're all part of everything, nothing special, nothing different, we're just part of everything. With our suffering, with our karma, with the mistakes we make and the things we have to fix, or all the things we deal with, or the relationships we have, our work, our friends, and all that, we have to deal with all these things. Yes, they don't just go away. And yet, if we can just see them as part of that, the great matter, just things we work with, things we accept, do our best with, and to practice kindness and sympathy and all that, it really, really helps everything. We can't fix the world, but we can try to do our bit. We can do something about ourselves, we're always saying this. We can try to see our selfishness and recognize it for what it is and do something about it. Relinquish the grip a little bit. We don't have to worry too much about does it exist or not exist, unless we like to do that. Just to consider, there's more beings than me in this world. There's people with all different views, different ways of living. They're just as valid as me, although, you know, I might think my views are the best and they're the only ones to have. Other people think their views are the best and the only ones to have. And can I relinquish my grip on rightness, you know, or whatever it might be? To see our selfishness and recognize it, or to try to see it, we don't always. To practice kindness and generosity, benevolence and sympathy, for all beings and for ourselves, ourselves too. Kindness to ourselves when we mess up. A little generosity when we don't know something or we make a mistake, you know. Benevolence, wishing ourselves well as other beings. And for the rest, we can practice faith. Faith in the great matter. Faith in that which sustains us, supports us, helps us, whether we see it or not. We all rest within that great net of kindness that sustains all beings. And we can fight against it or accept it and relax into it. The latter is a lot easier and better. Easier sometimes easier, sometimes we flail. But to remember that it's there, despite our best efforts, it sustains us through all things. Faith that without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails, as they say. One of the laws of the universe, without fail, evil is vanquished and good prevails, no matter what it looks like. In the end, things work out. People learn. People do learn. It may look as though the world's always going to be this way, always has been. But individuals learn. Individuals grow and change, learn something, learn better ways of doing things. There's great suffering in this world, and there's great goodness also. You don't always see the goodness. You don't see the kindness, or people just raising their kids, or doing deeds of the utmost kindness. They're less visible than the awful things, but they're there. And we just don't want to forget that. Just to do our bit. We don't have to do huge deeds. Just to do our best to practice kindness, acceptance, compassion, and trust ourselves to the great matter that holds everything. The good people, the crazy people, you know, the animals, the humans, the beings, the trees, the rocks, and even us. Thank you. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha.